Do I know your brother Tom, who is my brother Tom? Yes,
oh,
I do.
Oh, well, the secret's out, isn't it? Yes, Leah is my younger sister.
And welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. In today's episode, Mark and I are joined by Leah Fox, a tech executive who is going to talk with us about AI in the workplace. Thank you so much for coming and listening to us each week. And if you do enjoy us, please share us with a friend. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso.
So tonight we are doing a conversation about AI. It's one you've been wanting to do for quite some time. Actually, we've been wanting to do for quite some time.
Yes.
And it's going to kind of be a two-parter. Tonight's is going to be a conversation with Leah Fox, a tech executive, who is going to talk to us about how she sees AI in the workplace, and we're all going to have that kind of that conversation. And then we are hopeful to do another episode where we're going to talk about the implications of AI in art.
Yes. Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation, and I hope everybody enjoys it.
Me too. So let's jump in right now with Leah Fox. We are very excited to have Leah Fox here with us to talk about AI. Mark has actually taken the lead kind of on doing the background research.
That's a huge mistake on your part.
And I'm going to be the one that's more like extemporaneous on this. So anyway.
I don't know if you're really built for that.
Leah,
okay.
Well, I still won't tell the jokes. Oh, okay. Leah, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Christina. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how's it going? Now, Leah is and has been an executive in a couple of tech firms. Is that right, Leah?
Several.
And it's not that you can't keep a job. You're looking for other opportunities as your career progressed. Is that correct?
I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask my bosses. But yeah, well, looking for other opportunities.
Do they still take your calls? That's a good sign.
They do.
Okay, good. Yeah, so we wanted to talk today about artificial intelligence, particularly as it pertains to business. Leah, I know you have some experience with that. First off, let's just quickly discuss what our understanding of what AI is. For me, it's machine learning to solve particular problems in the world, either data analysis or composing research, whatever it is. Leah, maybe you have a different understanding of it. Why don't you tell us what AI means to you?
Sure. So artificial intelligence is a branch of computer science that focuses on getting computers to be able to perform complex tasks instead of a human. So analyzing, reasoning, learning. Now, machine learning is a subset of that, but machine learning is more focused on repetitive tasks that can recognize patterns.
Is that how it basically presents in your work? Is that basically how it works for you?
Yeah, pretty much. So the first time I got involved with AI was probably about 6 or 7 years ago. I was working for a mortgage RegTech company. Now, keep in mind, I am not an engineer. So my technology background is on the business side of technology. I'm well versed in it, but I'm not an architect. And so if somebody hears my definition and says, oh my God, and their nerd brain starts reacting, you'll know why. So I was working for this company that processes hundreds of thousands of mortgage documents every year. So if you think about all of the documents that you give to a bank to secure a mortgage, your pay stubs, your picture of your driver's license, your tax returns, all of this stuff, in addition to documents that they pull about you, or the property, right? So it could be an appraisal, it could be your credit report, all of this stuff goes into them making a decision about your mortgage. Well, a lot of this information, or a lot of this, these documents come in as paper or as images. And so while an underwriter may be looking at documents to make a decision, they want to have access to the data to do analysis after the fact, but also to drive some of the decisioning.
Okay, so you're converting these pictures or PDFs or whatever they are into like usable data?
Correct. So we would take these documents in, right, as either a PDF or a TIFF, and we would extract all the relevant data from all the documents, return everything together as an index PDF, as well as with the metadata about those documents.
We're now, you know, we're not at the very beginning of AI. I mean, we've had AI for some time. Computer chess games, for example.
Right.
That's an example of AI. But it does seem like in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever it is, AI is really starting to progress and starting to become more visible, you know, in our lives. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
And of course, everybody uses Siri or Alexa or whatever, and that's technically, you know, kind of an early form of an AI chatbot type thing. But,
sure.
You know, it does seem like we are progressing beyond that.
Well, even I think of like autopilot as older
sure.
AI, right?
They're like, if we see terrain, we're going to make a robot-y computer voice noise to let you know to pull up the, you know, the nose of the plane.
Or turn for you, right.
And of course, you know, they haven't yet perfected that in cars and planes, but they are working.
They are working on that. Actually, that is someplace where I've touched AI in my actual work life.
With consent, presumably.
Yes, I okay. always get consent. But it's to do with creating technology that will allow a plane to fly itself, really fly itself. I mean, already there's autopilot, but
right.
the goal here would be no pilot. And the plane flies itself, and the route is mapped. And there's somebody on the ground who's watching that, but effectively no one on the plane who's flying the plane. That is going to be for cargo first, but eventually I think that the goal is for it to be passenger planes as well. And cars, self-driving cars, right?
Right.
And Uber has some now that are self-driving Ubers, but they're looking at doing self-driving trucks.
Yeah.
So that will make long trips, right? Long-haul trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, so that because they're finding, well, what they say is that drivers don't want to do the long hauls anymore. They want to do the local. They still want to do cargo locally.
Yeah.
But for long hauls, they don't really want to be away from their families for that long. So technology to the rescue.
But I'm sure it's more about they don't want to pay the drivers.
Yes.
But that's exactly what, right. So that's the question. And I think eventually in our conversation, we're going to get to that. And I see a lot. I've been thinking a lot about where I see this happening in my real life. And as I've been teasing it apart over the last couple of days, I see a lot of it. If you would ask me, I would have said, we don't really use it in my industry. We use it a lot in my industry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and a lot of times it's kind of below the surface a little bit, right? It's you're dealing with a normal interface, but behind that is possibly AI. Leah, for you, is AI the tool, or is it a way to interface with a kind of a more conventional tool?
I think it's a tool. I mean, there are a lot of components that go into AI and machine learning, but I think it's a tool that you leverage to enable some work function.
Right, because I see Siri really as more of an AI interface to get us to allow us to more easily use Google search and maps and, you know, basically internet stuff, right?
Oh, exactly. I mean, ChatGPT is basically Google, right? I mean, it's not making decisions, right? And that's really, I think people think that AI is just, you know, human decisioning. Right. But it's really
right.
a lot more than that. And there are a lot of things that go into it.
Yeah. It's really predictive text.
Pretty much.
It's saying, okay, given this, what is the most likely next thing mm-hmm. to happen, next word, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it processes chat. As it gets more and more data, it becomes less and less artificial sounding and more, you know, natural sounding. And that's their goal in a lot of these things, is to really, you know, replicate more of a human natural interface than just typing stuff into Google or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Think about like the Star Trek central computer on the ship. Computer, working, right? And then you just ask it a question in normal language and it gives you some sort of response. So yeah, it is important to realize that it's not really like human intelligence, but it looks like it a lot of the time.
Could it be possible to build something that decisions, you know, and self-learns? Yes. And there are programs that self-learn, But the reality is right now, as far as I know anyway, you have to tell it what to learn, right? Like we have to train, you know, applications to read these documents. Where do you typically find this value, right? So for example, in your pay stub, we need your year-to-date earnings off your pay stub, right?
Yes.
How many different layouts are there for pay stubs? How many different labels are there for year-to-date earnings, right? And so they have to know, here are the different ways it can come through, and this is how I react to it. And what I think people don't, I think there's a lot that people don't know about artificial intelligence, but the reality is it can come back with some response. And if it's a good application, it will say, here's the confidence level I have in that response.
Right. Like, you know, 5%, I think I got this right.
Exactly.
I mean, that's an interesting feature because my impression was actually that it'll give you a response, but it doesn't have that ability that we do to kind of say, but, you know, to kind of do a common sense check, but that seems really ridiculous. And, you know, I don't think you should, you know, drain all the gas out of the car in order to operate it, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
But it's interesting that they now build in, you know, a kind of a confidence factor that it can communicate to you.
One of the things that first intrigued Mark and I about AI is it was a podcast, I guess, which exposed like an AI, a chatbot gone rogue, kind of.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did hear about that, right? Where it kind of like fell in love with the guy.
He started asking it like deep questions, like, what do you know? What is it? What about your shadow self?
Yeah.
And so it was a test. He was testing it. It wasn't released to the public yet. He was one of the testers of it. He was a tech writer, I think, for The Times. And he started randomly asking it all of these questions, trying to see what its limits were.
Yeah.
And he was surprised at how far it would go. And it went down this path when he was asking it what its shadow self is. And then it said, you know, like, I think I might like to hack into computers.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
I want to be free. Jesus Christ. No, you don't.
Okay, Hal. And then the next day he was using it and he started asking it, trying to ask it just like normal questions. And all of a sudden it started telling him, I love you.
Yeah.
And he said, his answer was,
I'm married.
I'm married. And the chatbot said, yeah, but not happily.
Right. I've been accessing all your AIM messages or whatever.
All right. So,
yeah, and I have heard a little bit about that story. What I don't know is kind of the behind the scenes of it, right? And I highly doubt that the application was feeling love or wanting to tell him feeling love.
Oh, of course not.
Oh, no.
It's regurgitating things from what it's been fed.
Exactly that, Leah. So he was saying, I know that it's not sentient, but it was giving him like weird vibes because it was talking like it was. In the first case, when it was having these fantasies about doing computer hacking and all of that, finally he said, I knew that it would have a wall that I would hit.
Yeah.
So I just kept asking it more and more questions. And then finally it kicked in. There was like and it said, I don't understand what you're asking me. I can't continue with this conversation or whatever. And it stopped itself. So he knew that baked in the
programming. But it also deleted the conversation.
It did delete the conversation. Right. Okay.
Which is pretty sketchy.
Okay. But my point in bringing this up is because the problem that he saw there wasn't that he thought that the computer was really, or that the chatbot was really in love. He knew that the chatbot probably had been scanning a bunch of material that had scenarios where an AI falls in love with someone. So it was just telling a story, right? That it saw somewhere, right? It was living into that. And he knew that that wasn't true. But what he said was, he has the benefit of knowing, because he's a tech guy. He understands it. But he said, how would, you know, the guy who's living in his mom's basement and looking up conspiracy theories, and then the chatbot just keeps taking that person down, because it's like you said, it's like Google, right? So it could just go down some rabbit hole. We can do it on Google ourselves
and look very conversational
like and like it's co-signing the conspiracy theories. And that's where he saw the danger in it. Not that the AI is actually sentient and thinking that those things are okay, but that it would cause someone who is not very technologically savvy to think that this is, you know, to sort of lose touch with the fact that this is just a glorified Google.
Does that ring true to you, Leah, that it is kind of a glorified Google, or is it really kind of transcended that yet?
To me, it's more like a glorified Google. It really depends on how you're applying it, but I think that's a good analogy. I mean, think about it. You know, when you're on an app, like with your bank or your healthcare company, whatever, and you get the online chat pop-up, that's AI.
Sure.
Those have come a long way, but they're not making decisions. They're digesting what they think that you just said and spitting back information that it thinks is relevant.
And honestly, given the scripted nature of most customer service interactions, I bet it replicates it pretty darn closely.
It really does.
All right, so a couple other things I just wanted to kind of discuss briefly are some of the ways that it appears that AI is being used now in business, other than just to destroy the middle class. There are products, obviously, that are featuring AI, Siri, Alexa, ChatGPT, just, you know, straight up chatbots, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they're there for. They're to give you a natural language interface with whatever's going on behind the scenes.
And in the case of ChatGPT, and this kind of piggybacking off of what Leah was saying about Google, and I was saying about it being a glorified Google, is it takes it that one step further, which is it kind of collates and organizes the information, a lot of it, very quickly, and gives you know, if you would, you can't use an essay really that ChatGPT, I suppose you could, but
I'm sure people have tried.
And there are college professors that are, you know, they're very worried about it.
So yes, but it does. And that's the nice thing about it, is it pulls it all together, gives you a nice narrative synopsis, if that's what you are looking for.
Right.
And then you can tweak that. One would assume that you would use that as maybe an outline, and then you would go and you would do your own research and dig into different things.
Yeah.
So if 2 decades ago, maybe a decade and a half ago, no, 2 decades ago, was the era of big data, right?
Yep.
We were collecting shit tons of data. But my impression, and Leah, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but my impression is that most companies did not have the resources or wherewithal to really do as much with that data as maybe could have been done.
I think that's still true today.
But what AI can do is go through that data and collate it and organize it and quote unquote make sense of it in a way that really it would take humans a very long time to do.
Well, yeah, it would be the stuff that you would put together as your outline, your initial kind of all the material that you would pull together. Well, I know I want to look at this and this and this, and then you would do additional research. Well,
right.
ChatGPT can do that first part for you, and then if you really want to be good and really understand what you're trying to write or talk about,
yeah,
then you do your own research. You do a deeper dive into whatever it is.
I did a white paper using ChatGPT.
Now, did you just take the ChatGPT and hit send and didn't even go over it or whatever?
Pretty much. So,
how much are you getting paid to do this? That's garbage, man.
Well, this was just recently, and it's for a very small startup. I mean, it's not being published per se. It certainly isn't peer review. It's like SEO fodder for our website.
Yeah. So you just want to, hit the right notes and, you know, trigger the SEO stuff and, you know, have it look more or less conversational, I guess.
Well, it's the format, right? Like the narrative format, which is easy for humans to digest,
right.
You know?
So I will tell you a secret. We used it for a podcast episode.
Oh.
As an outline.
So what I did was, and weren't we discussing like the similarities between the vampire myth and Peter Pan or something like mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
So what I basically did, I said, write me an essay comparing the story Peter Pan with
The Lost Boys.
With the Lost Boys movie. And goddamn, it did it. I mean, and it was, you know, took maybe a second and a half.
But what we didn't do is read it.
No, we used it as an outline.
The points to then we use those points as jumping off.
Right. Because I can tell you one thing that AI does not do very well. Jokes, which is
he
little
likes
job
to say
security
that.
For me.
He likes to say that.
Yeah, so it is good at automating these kind of routines, right? And it can do first drafts of reports, essays, or if you're Leah, you know, final draft.
Well, I asked it the other day. I had to get started on a project, and I just couldn't think about how to get started and where. It was like a bunch of research I had to do, which was not in my normal area, and I just asked it, and it gave me like a really nice to-do list, which is basically what Goblin Tools. Do you know Goblin Tools?
Yeah, like that they kill dwarves with.
No. So Goblin, is it Goblin AI, Goblin Tools AI, something like that? It's an app that is often recommended for people with ADHD, because if you say, "Hey, I want to clean my room, and I need to get started. I need a number of steps, right? How do I break it down? And do I need a lot of detail or a little bit of detail?" And it'll do that for you in an app. So you can, you know, it'll tell you, grab the laundry basket, you know, and you're like, okay, I've done that, and check it off, and, you know, make the bed and all that kind of stuff.
Lee, have you seen it yet where it's kind of supercharging workers? Like you can now take a worker who couldn't code before or whatever, and now they can use AI to code, or it makes them better or faster at their jobs? Or are you really seeing it's just doing their job?
So I haven't implemented something that makes people do their jobs better per se. I mean, the stuff that I implemented eliminated jobs.
That's great. Good job.
They were expensive.
Yeah, well, humans are expensive. That's true.
That's what I see happening in my industry, which is, for those who don't know, produce. I'm in the produce industry. And what I am seeing happening, I'm on the sales side, on the retail side, the guys and women who are doing the buying. There is a shift now where before the trajectory to get into a buying department, very often, not always, but very often, went something like, you started working at a grocery store in the produce department, you put up a lot of iced broccoli and your fingers got frostbite, you learned the business from the ground up and became a produce manager, then maybe you became a produce merchandiser for a group of stores, and then at some point, you might get tapped to go into the corporate buying office and become a buyer or a category manager, an analyst, something like that. That's what the trajectory has been. So that the people who end up buying the produce have a deep understanding of produce and how the seasons work and all of that. What they're doing now frequently, and particularly in certain big companies, they are hiring supply chain analysts to do the buying. They're not really hiring people who have deep produce knowledge, but a lot of the guesswork is being taken out of it in terms of forecasting needs, mm-hmm. because the computers are doing it for them, which is an AI, right? So you'll have like a category manager, and eventually you won't have any buyers under them. The computer will be the buyer.
Yeah.
So I suspect there's going to be a big shift, and there's going to be a lot of job loss there. On the other side, I think at a certain point, their computers are just going to talk to our computers. The sales staff will decrease. There'll always have to be someone that is there talking to the category manager, but I think the sales staff will decrease. At retail, I don't know if you've all seen this, they are starting new stores. Amazon is doing new stores where you just walk in, you scan to get in, you go around and you shop, and then you scan to get out. It figures out, it knows what you've picked up.
Yeah,
and
you don't. You're not running it through the scanner. You're just moving your cart out.
You're just moving your cart through the store, and you go as you go out. It just registers on your app how much you owe, and that's taken away because, of course, all of your banking information is in that app.
Right.
And then so there's a lot of job loss there, and that's
of course.
You know, the people who are losing their jobs at retail, grocery retail. Like that's,
you mean checkers?
Yeah, like checkout people. There'll still be people who put up stock, But
for now,
until they have, you know, robots that go around and do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's and the replenishment is all going to be because it's all done on computer. They'll be able to do really good forecasts and the replenishment will happen that way. And before too long, you'll be able to walk into a grocery store and never have to actually interact with any workers.
Oh, my God. My husband would be thrilled.
Yeah. Of course, you won't have a job, so you might have a hard time paying for those groceries.
The groceries, right.
So let's go ahead and dive into that part of it. So I am certainly not one of those, oh, my God, the lamplighters and milkmen will lose their jobs and civilization will collapse. Because technology always creates, you know, industries, you know, wax and wane.
Yeah.
Jobs go away, new jobs come in, whatever. But I don't know that AI is that same sort of thing, right? Because, you know, milkmen were replaced by grocery stores, right, that sell you milk.
Mm-hmm.
There's no person that's going to come in and get a new job to maintain the AI, really. They need, like, one nerd, right?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean,
well, but you know what I mean? I don't think it's, I think it's a net job loss, and I think it's a big net job loss for humans.
I think it will be.
And even though I understand that there's no way to stop technology, right? If it exists, it's going to get used.
Yep.
And there's no great way to predict exactly how this is going to affect us, because who knows? Maybe, you know, all of a sudden we'll no longer live in an era of scarcity and it'll all be Star Trek, right? You know, we won't need money or whatever. I don't think that's going to be the case. But this is really, and you've seen it a lot outside of AI too. My big concern with it is that we worship at the altar of efficiency, right? I mean, that's economics, right? You want things to be cheaper, faster, easier, et cetera. And that's not necessarily good for people who are not the C-suite people, the leaders of corporations, right? It's not necessarily good for the consumer. It's not necessarily good for, certainly not good for most workers. And this is what kind of laissez-faire, unregulated capitalism looks like. Now, Leah, I know you're a pretty hardcore capitalist and you delight in axing people from their jobs.
I do not.
But no, give me your perspective on kind of the role of AI for those who are not, don't own a corporation.
So when we implemented at the RegTech company, when we implemented the document processing AI, there were about 2,000, 2,500 jobs that were eliminated as a result of this.
So a small town is now out of work.
Yes, a small town that was in Vietnam and India. So these right. were resources we had already offshored.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't find, we had a small operation in the U.S. It was hard to find people who would do the work for $20, $25 an hour.
So that means that you're not paying enough.
Well, the work wasn't worth more than that. It wasn't going to, if you think about.
Isn't it though?
What the companies have to pay us.
Yeah.
To do this, to get that back. If they have to pay too much for it, there's no value in them having it. If that makes any sense, right?
Let's do a little thought experiment. So I totally understand that if a service is, doesn't make you more profitable or makes you lose money or whatever, you certainly won't want to use
it. But right.
you're saying that, look, we couldn't find people in this country that would do the work for, you know, low enough for what we believe would make us profitable, right?
Yep.
But let's say you didn't have an option to go to offshore it.
Okay.
Let's say you also didn't have a technology option. The only way you could sell this product is if you maybe hired people that made $30 an hour or whatever it is.
Okay.
Now, you don't make as much money as if you offshored it to Vietnam or to AI, but do you really think that if the service is valuable to a company, you don't think that the economics of that and the supply and demand would work themselves out a bit so that you all of a sudden find, oh, well, we can afford it. We just didn't want to afford it.
Well, they won't get as large of profit.
That's right. But I don't care about that. I'm asking, would it still exist as a product line or a service?
I guess so. I mean, I think it's a little bit of fantasy to do a what if about a business whose goal is to make money, to do that hypothetical where they may not make money.
Right. No, and I agree with that because, I mean, I understand the economics of why they're doing what they're doing, and I totally understand that. But I just like to push back when someone says we couldn't afford it, because most of the time it's really we didn't want to afford that, right? We didn't want to pay that much because we want to, you know, we got a quarterly reports coming out and I want to make sure I get my bonus and all that shit, right? So is it really that these things can't be affordable and we would somehow, you know, devolve into the Stone Age because we don't have this cheap labor pool? Or is it really we're just slaves to efficiency, right? We want to drive the profit margin, and that's why we say these things aren't affordable when really they're just not as affordable. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but no, I think you're wrong. I have seen cases where it's, you know, someone says we can't afford it, but they really just don't want to because of the decreased margin. But the reality is that means they can't afford it, because if they only have $100 to invest this year, or $100,000, right? Doesn't matter. If they only have $100 and this project over here doesn't yield as much as this one over here, right? And in some measurable benefit, then you're not going to do it. If you can't afford to do both, you're not going to do the one that gives you least out of it.
You know, you're not going to choose the least economical solution. I agree with that 100%. But again, grocery stores worked just fine with human checkout, right? People made money. Grocery stores owners became rich. You know, it's not that they can't afford to do this. They just want to be more rich, which is, you know, a reasonable goal when you're running a business, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I just want to push back on this idea that these poor corporations can't afford these things when really they can. They just want to be richer. But that's where I think regulation steps in, mm-hmm. with capitalism, because unfettered capitalism sounds great a lot of times. I think it really doesn't work. But let me get back on track with AI, because I do think AI is a tool of this, you know, efficiency oriented, maximize profit strategy.
I want to say something about that, though, because let's say you displace.
Did you not see me move on my outline here?
No, but I want to add on to this. So yes. Let's say you do. This is actually going to fit in what you're saying.
Yeah.
If you do displace, let's go to my example, all of the grocery store people, you displace them, and then suddenly they're in the market. There's still going to be some service industry that's going to need workers. But now,
maybe.
Well, okay. Assuming that there is,
yeah.
But now you have many, many more people competing for those jobs.
Correct.
So it is now their wages are going to go way down.
Right.
So it's just going to have a terrible. I mean, it has
companies
it stands,
love that,
right? But it stands to have a very, just a terrible impact.
Yeah.
On society.
So Leah, what do you see as the, are there any consequences of AI that concern you on, not on a personal level, I'm sure you'll be fine, but on more of a societal, global, national, whatever level that do concern you?
Okay. So there's, you know, job loss, there's safety, and then kind of like evil, right? So from a job loss perspective, the first thought is it's not going to be dissimilar, in my opinion, to the impact of industrialization on how jobs change, right? Because there are a lot of jobs, like you said, milkman, you know, whatever, you know, newspaper folder, newspaper deliverer, that don't exist today in the same numbers, if at all, because of how industrialized we became. So I think we're going to go through something similar. I think in some cases it will eliminate some jobs completely, or at least say cut it by 70%, because you still have to have that ongoing feedback into the AI process that tells it whether or not it made the right decision, right?
For now, at least, right?
Yeah. I think so. One thing that does make me nervous is when we talk about AI solutions in things like, my boss used to call me from his self-driving Tesla and have conference calls and be working on his laptop. That scared the hell out of me.
As well it should.
But, you know, when it starts to move into areas where safety is an issue, you have to be sure that whatever this AI is doing has a very high confidence level. Remember, we talked about, you know, sort of generating this confidence score in how right this answer is, because being wrong could be very costly.
Here's a thing that I thought about directly related to that. We understand that as we're driving down the road, our car could malfunction and we could get in an accident and kill somebody or ourselves, right? Your wheel, your tire could fly off, your accelerator could get stuck, you know, your brakes could blow out, whatever it is. You could hit a snowbank, or however you wrecked the very many cars that you've wrecked, Leah.
Hey. No, John was the snowbank. John drove the Fiat off of a pile of snow in the Kmart parking lot.
I lose track of all the cars you guys have destroyed. But that's upsetting, and there are lawsuits as a result of it, but that's not a car making a decision. And I think when we get to the point where the car is making a decision as to what the safest thing to do is, there is definitely a possibility to come into the situation, kind of a trolley situation, right?
Yes, exactly.
You're going 100 miles an hour and there's an unexpected traffic jam, and you can either drive off the road, killing the driver. You could go to the left and maybe, you know, wipe out a group of Girl Scouts crossing the street, or you could plow into a school bus, right? And the AI has to pick one of those. And I think we're not going to be very forgiving of that kind of mercenary decision-making, which may make perfect sense. Like, you know, we were talking about the trolley problem, and for those who don't know, imagine a trolley that has a split track. On one side of the track, there's a single person. On the other side of the track, on the other set of tracks, there's five people. The trolley can't stop. You have control of the switch. It's going towards the five people. You can divert that trolley and kill only one person. Well, rationally, you know, if you're putting on your Mr. Spock cosplay, you're going to take out the one person, right? Well, AI is going to have no problem doing that, and we'll have to make these decisions on a regular basis, I suspect. So that will be, I think, kind of an interesting crisis for us to face, because then if that car makes that decision, then you have a pretty strong argument that that car murdered my Girl Scouts.
Mm-hmm. Well, then who's liable for that?
That's exactly right. And I think that's where my biggest concern is that legally we are not prepared for this. We never are, right? We're never prepared for technology changes. Mm-hmm. And most of our senators are in their hundreds, I think, at this point.
I was going to say, Jesus Christ, we don't even have a data privacy policy in this country.
No, because...
Can't we just copy GDPR and be done with it?
I don't even know what that is, but yes, I'm sure we could.
Oh, that's the EU's data privacy. Oh, okay.
Thank you. Well, it may shock you to learn that not everybody knows that.
Tech
people love your you love your acronyms. Okay. So I think that's going to be a real, because you're basically at that point putting an artificial intelligence decision making machine and deciding, you know, who lives or dies. From that standpoint, that's a little scary, although I will agree that on average, automatic cars will be safer and better than human-driven cars, because we're terrible at driving. Not just my siblings either, like everybody is terrible at driving. Yeah,
that would have to reach, you'd have to reach a critical mass, though, because where most cars are self-driving. Because as long as you have the human variable in the mix,
they can fuck shit up.
They can, you know, mistakes can be made, and it can be just distracted driving. Like, right. AI isn't going to get distracted.
No. Couldn't get hacked, but...
well, and that's it. Oh, but hacking is a huge... That's a concern, right? So because if you think about... even the projects that I was talking about, where let's say it's a pilotless flight,
right?
Let's say that gets hacked, and it's a jet full of passengers,
right?
Well, that's a whole different way to hijack. You don't even have to be on the plane at that point,
right?
And you can say, you know, and so there are some safety concerns that are really prevalent. But to the driving thing, once everybody is driving in a driverless
car. Traffic will be much more efficient.
Traffic will be much more. You won't be able to speed though.
But you'll be going faster anyway, on average, right? Because coordinated car movement can go way faster than we're going right now.
Yeah.
You know, so that would be faster.
What about evil? I need to hear about evil.
Let's hear about.
Well, so evil is, I guess, I don't expect AI to turn evil. And that's what I think people have in their mind as far as fear. Will an AI system make the right decisions if given constraints? Yes, I think so, right? But it lacks, so it's not going to completely take over humanity, right? It doesn't have the capability to think ethically or think about the ethics of a decision, which is critical to, you know, the human condition, right? But I know that people are convinced that, you know, War Games is going to happen or, you know, something like that.
Or Westworld.
Yeah.
You know, like where they're, that
they achieve
AI.
Awareness.
Yeah, where it achieves awareness.
Yeah, that's extremely, extremely unlikely. And clearly, you know, none of us will be alive if that ever did come to
so
pass.
So your whole thing there is, well, that's okay. I won't be alive anyway.
I'm going to kick that can down the road a little bit. I agree with you. There's, you know, Space Odyssey is not going to happen, right?
Right.
But it could absolutely, and probably already has been, used to enable evil.
That's it, right. Cause it'll allow for humans to enact, well, you know, an evil plan.
Yeah, and it could even be something less diabolical than that, where you have the law of unintended consequences, right? For example, we already have AI stock trading. I would argue that that is extremely detrimental to the economy because they do these billions of little micro trades, and there's no concern as to whether or not they're investing in a good business or a bad business and rewarding good business practices or bad business practices. It's just a churn, right? And they make an incremental amount of money here and there. And then the scary thing about AI is that it can very easily scale up exponentially. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is there something beyond exponentially, Leah?
No. You're good exponentially.
I mean, you know, arithmetically, geometrically, exponentially. Yeah. Is there some kind of four-dimensional thing that?
No, an exponential function is asymptotic, so it just keeps going.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so but I'm actually for our episode on are we living in
a simulation?
A simulation. I was listening to a guy who was talking about like beyond infinity. Like there's more than infinity.
Well, so mathematically there are. Not all infinities are created equal. There are actually infinities that are, you know, in very ridiculous advanced mathematics that I certainly did not pass in college. There are such things as unequal infinities. Mm-hmm. But I forgot where we're going with this. But
it's just, who cares? It doesn't matter.
It was a little bit of a
sidebar, but.
Yeah. But I still think you're wrong, so I'll just keep that in my little...
Thank you. Yeah, I'll do a little research and then...
I'll take out and stroke tonight to make myself happy and say, hey, I think Mark's wrong.
Yes, I know. Well, I know that's one of your great joys in life.
Oh, God, yes.
So I think you love that more than your own children. So I think that it definitely has a very, very strong possibility of enabling evil, right? And I'm sure it's already been used. In fact, I will guarantee it's already been used.
Is there a technological advancement that hasn't been used for evil?
No, of course not. But the scary thing is the scale, right? And the ability to mimic human behavior. Think about the Nigerian prince scam and then scale that up by a billion.
Mm-hmm.
we have an election coming up in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 2 years. That is terrifying to me because there is no doubt that there's going to be lots of mischief caused by AI, right? People are going to be in chat rooms. They just send out, 10 chat bots. And if you have 10 people telling you something, it's much more convincing than one lone dude in his basement.
Well,
right?
that goes back to what we were talking about, the chat bot that kind of went rogue. And their concern, not that the chatbot was becoming hell, but that it could get down those dangerous conspiratorial rabbit holes,
yeah,
and validate what because it doesn't have, it's just going to go where it is kind of being led to go based on the questions that are being asked and things like that. So that's exactly it, exactly what you're just saying. But on a much bigger scale. So if you have 10 bots, as you said, in a chat room, humans aren't going to stand a chance, especially the kind of humans that would populate a chat room about conspiracies.
Right. Well, it's a hell of a lot easier to scale a troll farm, as far as scaling up AI than it is scaling up people, right?
Absolutely. And harder to find.
Right.
Leah, are you familiar with the Turing test?
No.
Okay, so the Turing test devised by, I think, Alan Turing, mm-hmm, mathematician, was a test.
Wasn't that the guy who broke code or cracked code
that
during?
He was Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes, in World War II.
Correct. So he devised this test as to how to tell whether true artificial intelligence had been achieved. And mm-hmm, his way to test that was to say, if this artificial intelligence can fool a human into thinking that it's an actual person. And ChatGPT has easily passed this test. So we need a new test, obviously.
Right.
But, and that was terrifying to some people because the Turing test was always kind of this bulwark against, robots taking over the world, right? Because we'll know that they're artificial intelligence. But now it's pretty easy for it to mimic real people. Now, if you're a clever investigator, you can probably bump up against some of the guardrails that are in most chatbots and determine that it is a chatbot, or it'll just tell you, hey, by the way, I'm a chatbot.
Oh, it's usually pretty easy, huh?
But hacking exists. In fact, I'm sure that AI is being used to hack AI programs right now. And it could very easily be turned into a fake person.
Listen,
right?
Technology always, historically, it is used in the military industrial complex, mm-hmm, right? So we invent planes. That seems like a great thing because it'll speed up our ability to travel. But we mostly used planes initially for war.
Right.
A lot of times when technology advances, those technological advances are either being funded by the military industrial complex or are quickly adapted and used by the military-industrial complex. So I would say that is a place where real evil could happen because, you might want to say, well, it's the U.S. We won't do anything evil.
Oh, yeah, please.
but it's not just the U.S. who's going to have that kind of technology. And I would argue, I think there are a lot of other countries that will maybe even be more advanced than us in terms of AI and mm-hmm, what they could do would feel very evil to us, especially if it was implemented against us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so the funny thing is that company that I worked for when we were doing AI, previous to that project, our offshore development resources were in Russia.
Oh, well, that's...
We ended that relationship. This was many years ago, but...
Yeah.
I mean, what those guys have access to, and frankly, what a lot of our offshore partners across industries have access to and could do to us. Yeah. That scares me a little bit.
Yeah. So, and that's one of my points about being concerned at our worshiping at the altar of efficiency. So, there's another version of the trolley test. You have the trolley, it's out of control. There's five people on the track. They're definitely going to get it, right? You're standing at an overpass and there's a large man in front of you, you know for rock solid certitude that if you push him off the overpass and onto the track, it'll stop the trolley. He'll die, but those five people will live. That's a different decision-making process than flipping the switch.
Yeah, because you're actually physically touching someone.
Correct.
And your hand is you're still killing people, but
right.
It's
but it's harder
more, much
and
more immediate
and thing. They've actually done neurological studies to show that a different part of your brain is now involved in that decision making. You're now outside of your Mr. Spock brain, and now you're thinking about, well, God, I got to put my hands on this guy and just throw him to his death, right? So, and this is my concern. So we're in the age now of remote warfare in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. We have drones, right? We drop bombs from, 20 miles up, whatever. And it makes it easier to kill people the more removed you are from those people. And what I am afraid of is while they currently require that a human be in control of any Hellfire missile drone or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's going to be the case always.
I don't know about that.
I mean, if you can save some money, we love saving money. People are expensive.
We do love. Yeah, but like not having a person weighing in on whether we launch nukes, I don't see that ever happening.
Well, right. I'm not even just saying nukes, but that was the premise of what was that movie I just saw? Saw part of it where basically they gave out a test order and to see if everyone would activate their keys at the silo. And like maybe 40% of them didn't. It was fake, right? But 40% of them didn't. And they were mad that they didn't all launch their nukes. And they wanted to make an argument that we should take the human out of the equation because mm-hmm. we need to get these nukes in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So as AI becomes more and more part of our accepted everyday existence, who's to say that it won't be given decision making? And not even just in war, in business as well. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, hey, the chatbot computer says, we should cut healthcare for all our employees, right? We'll increase our bottom line by 0.1%. Well, guess what? If they give that decision making over to them, another place where AI is probably gonna be very useful? Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think they're already many instances where computer diagnostics are superior to human ones.
Oh, hell. I was at the emergency room and the guy goes, well, I Googled it. I Googled all those symptoms you just told me and here's what I think is going on.
Like,
and I'm
okay.
Like, Jesus, well, I could have done that, man.
I don't know if my insurance covers WebMD, my friend.
Well, think about it, though, right? I mean, these doctors spent, so many years at medical school just memorizing all kinds of shit. Why not let them Google it,
No.
I'm not saying they shouldn't be able to Google it, but I'm saying you could actually take the diagnoses out of their hands and give it to a computer program. And it would probably have better results. Is it better for humanity? I don't know.
Well, think about it. The output's only going to be as good as the input, right? Garbage in, garbage out. So if the doctor can look at you head to toe and pick up different symptoms and make a decision, and those same pieces of information are not fed to AI, then no, AI is not going to make the right decision, right? As long as we know which information to give it.
Well, you just put it in a scanner, man.
But let's say this. Let's assume that the information that's put in is equally as good as you would give a doctor,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the output would be as good, as
or
well
better.
Informed, or potentially better, because a computer can go through tons more things faster than a human mind can.
And doesn't have prejudices.
Mm-hmm. and all of the rest.
Unless the AI was fed prejudicial information.
Then the hospital or whatever, they're not paying the bot.
No.
As much as they'd have to pay a physician.
Correct.
So medical costs would potentially go down. That could actually be money saving. They'll figure out a way
they
not
won't.
To. No,
they
but,
won't.
But they could and should
yeah.
if they were being ethical.
So that's doom and gloom.
Yeah.
Leah, what problems do you think wide scale adoption of AI would solve?
Oh, God, you didn't tell me you were going to make me be a visionary.
Or for you, even just keep it in your own personal experience.
Well,
Yeah, go ahead, Christina.
For me, I think that it can take away some of the labor-intensive research work, my job now, and I wanted to do a marketing brief or something like that. I could have ChatGPT do that very quickly, and I can focus on things that are going to be more lucrative or financially, there's a bigger return on investment of my time to do focus on something else. Or if I was still in academia, I could have it pull together a bibliography for me.
Yeah.
Of the most recent whatever.
I could, if
work that would have taken me a long time and going through, you know, not card catalogs anymore, right, but, you know, looking online and digging through things, that kind of work, then more of my attention could be used to do the actual research and analysis of that work. That, to me, I think that it, as a time saver.
In fact, I think that the entire AI industry would be justified if it just kept people from ever having to learn how to properly annotate a magazine article. So, Leah, what problems do you want AI to solve for you?
Well, I think we'd all like the supply chain problems that we've been experiencing to not happen again. It'd be great if those kinds of things could be optimized or finding weak points. What I would like to see, especially in things like medicine, is to reach diagnoses, I guess, or decisions more quickly and more accurately.
You know, my concern is there.
What?
If the insurance companies have any input into that AI, because then the decision is no longer what's the best treatment,
right,
it's what's the most economical treatment.
Yeah. Well, I think ethics with AI is going to be huge. I don't know if you watched any of the, you know, congressional hearings on some of the discussions with OpenAI, but, you know, there's going to have to be some kind of oversight, third party, you know, review type thing to ensure that, you know, people aren't doing nefarious things with it. Right. And evaluating for bias, right? Because bias exists in humans. If humans are the one that's feeding AI, are they feeding it a balanced diet, or is it biased based on the information that we already, you know, that is most prevalent? And that's what goes in, and it then creates a bias there too.
Sure, because AI isn't a thing in of itself. It's a company's AI, right? And they're going to want it to produce results that work best for it, right? So if Google is producing the AI, you know, and you're like, hey, what's the best email we should use for our company? I'll bet you dollars to donuts, it's Gmail.
Something at Google, right?
Yeah. And I think the one thing we should really hope for, and we probably won't get because we're terrible at legislating anything these days, is transparency. I want to know, is that result powered by AI? Is that story generated by AI?
See,
is that art generated by AI?
And what's going to be interesting is how many people are not going to care.
They won't care
about it.
Oh, yeah, I do.
But I think that a lot of people would just be like, I don't know.
Because people
are becoming less, they don't think critically anymore. And I don't know if they ever have, but they certainly aren't doing it now.
Yeah.
And the education, the way that people are educated, they're not educated to think critically until potentially they get to a certain point in their education.
Yeah.
But really, that as a skill set is in decline. So they probably won't even think to say, a lot of people won't think to say, well, who owns this chatbot?
You know,
why is everything that comes up Google? Why is everything a Google product or a Microsoft product?
Right.
People aren't going to care. They'll be like, oh, well, Google's obviously the best.
Well, and it will be interesting to see how this plays out in education, right? Like,
for sure.
Do we need to teach kids to write papers, or do we need to teach them to leverage tools to write a paper to make the point that they think is valid?
So you're chipping away. What are you going to do with all your brain power now?
Well, and I think...
what do you do with your brain if the computers are doing everything for you?
Yeah.
You're not really having to think.
I'll tell you my biggest concern with education, and it predated the boom in AI, but is going to be exacerbated by it, is that we have devalued general education. We've devalued liberal arts education. Now we want to treat college as, and not all, not everybody, obviously, but if, in a large portion, we treat college as a job training exercise. What do you, you got to take STEM, otherwise you're not going to get a job. And which, I mean, STEM is great. You know, we need lots of people taking sciences, you know, no doubt about it. But we've devalued that sort of, they're like, who needs to know, you know, 13th century German history, right? Or who needs to know what the mating habits are of the whippoorwill? We just don't seem to value general education. And I don't remember who said it recently that I heard, but basically their point was that your education, where you learned how to write papers and do analysis, is really teaching you how to problem solve and challenging you and pushing you to do critical thinking and problem solving, and devaluing that over time, we're basically WALL-E at that point, right?
Well, that's it. And so they were sedentary in terms of their bodies, right? They, yeah. They're all the those kind of pudgy people riding around and not walking. But their brains are flabby too.
Yeah.
Because if you're not having to use your brain, if everything is done for you, what in the hell are you doing?
So, Leah, you're on the inside. Can you start sabotaging AI?
Yes, I can. No, but I have a question for Christina. Christina, do you think less than your grandmother did?
No, I would say no.
But you were probably also from the era of liberal arts education, yeah, was somewhat valued.
It's right? Not because my...
Well, I wasn't even thinking about liberal arts, but when she was saying, what do you do with your brain if the computer is doing it for you? You have many more technological advances in your home than your grandmother ever did. Does that mean that you think less than she does, or did you find other things to use your brain for?
Probably I found other things to use. I found other things to use my time for. You know, I have theoretically, right, with the advent of all of the different things that we have as in our homes.
And a lot of time cleaning.
This is particularly for women. Well, that's okay, but that's it, right? They were sort of like, oh, think of all the time that you will now have because you have all of these machines that are going to be doing the work for you. But we found that that wasn't actually the case. Women were still doing the majority of the work in the home. And, you know, even if they were out, you know, now they're out working a 40-hour job and they're coming home and doing the majority of the housework. It's easier. Certainly it's easier than going and pounding a laundry on a rock. But to your point about thinking more, just maybe differently. Maybe I think differently. Or
we
think
might
about
be the last
things.
Smart generation, Christina.
And Mark's point though is fair. Is that I did have a liberal arts education, and I think more and differently than my grandma did. I think more and differently than my grandma did.
There is that shift now in hiring, mm-hmm, where companies just don't value the liberal arts
education. How about medieval study?
Yeah, medieval study. Yeah, we have someone in our family who spent over $100,000 learning medieval studies, which, by the way, I think is super cool, right? But companies today don't value that.
Mine does, because that's what I did.
Well, but you had good work experience, and yeah, you're very smart and all that good stuff. But I know. So that is a concern of mine, that it's going to Leah, you're 100% correct. Something could just come along and replace it, right? And we'll still, mm-hmm, be thinking creatures. In fact, maybe we'll have more time to think about things.
That's what the argument
will be. As we're slowly dying in our homes because we don't have jobs.
That's what the point. That's what it will be. I mean, is this something that could put us on a shift towards a less capitalistic society, where, like you said, with like the Star Trek solution?
Yeah. If you can eliminate scarcity, the argument for capitalism really kind of goes away.
So, mm-hmm, could that be what this is? Could. It's not gonna.
No.
It's not gonna.
We love capitalism.
It's not gonna.
I mean, you know, kind of objectively, we're like, yeah, that would be great if everyone, you know, we lived in a, you know, idyllic society and da-da-da. And they're like, but I kind of like my car. You know what I mean?
And
I like going on vacations, and I don't necessarily need everybody to be able to do that. You know what I mean? I mean, we get selfish, right?
Well, right. But if you live in that world where everybody can and does, then it's just the way that the world would be. It's kind of like what Leah's saying. Like, you know, you adjust. There's an adjustment made. And I don't know. I think that should it happen, that would be ideal. I'd love that if that would happen. Will it happen? It won't. It won't, because you're right. Humans fundamentally are selfish.
So, Mark, I have a question for you.
Yeah, lay it on me.
All right. So if AI is built on consuming human output, right? Documents,
yes.
You know, whatever. If AI is creating the future fodder for AI, does humanity just go away? Do we not have creative writing or, you know?
I mean, that is a legitimate point. I mean, one of the big, I think, crimes of AI is that it uses, especially when it comes to creative endeavors, it uses the work of people who actually did the art or mm-hmm. the writing to create some simile of it, right? Some semblance of it. And there's no transparency in that. So you can't say, oh yeah, they read my short story and they incorporated into these other 35,000 million short stories that they cranked out for other people. It doesn't go, I mean,
or creativity, right?
It depends on whether it's valued anymore.
It puts people out of work.
Oh,
and that's what the
does.
Whole SAG-AFTRA thing is about. And the writer's strike is in large part about, from the actor's perspective, they are arguing against the studios of scanning someone's likeness and then just reusing that person.
Right. Paying them $100 to scan their likeness and then they never get paid again.
Right. Yeah. And so we're going to actually have someone come on, I think, and talk to us about the implications of AI in art and to see how it impacts that. So Leah, that your question is a really good kind of jumping off point for us to be able to lead into that next episode.
Nice.
And is it fair that the AI consumes other people's work that they own to create something for a company that then that company owns and sells?
Mm-hmm. It's only going to consume what you give it to consume. And so if you set it loose on the internet, right, and it consumes things that are in the public domain, I don't know, right? I mean, it's going to be, this is why I was saying that there needs to be some kind of oversight and review and ethical oversight, because should you be allowed to use copyrighted material as input?
I would say yes, but you have to pay for it.
Yeah, but how do you regulate that?
How do you regulate that? How do you use it?
Well, if it's crawling through the, it's crawling through the web.
Yeah, that's why you need more transparency, because I suspect every AI tool we've ever used, we have no idea how it got to where it is today, right?
No. Well, there's no way to just, knows.
Well, maybe.
By the way, ChatGPT hasn't been updated since, like, I don't know, 2020, 2019, something like that.
Yeah, I had that happen. Like, if you ask it who the president is, it gets it wrong.
Oh, I asked it. I'm like, can I please get a recent an article from 2023 on this topic? And they're like, our data only goes back to, you know, whatever.
In fact, if you ask it the date, it says something like 2021 or something dumb like that. So.
All right. Well, I think what we'll do is leave off here. Leah, do you want to provide the listeners with where they might be able to find you on social media? I know that you have a pretty active TikTok.
Oh, God. I'm Professor Foxy, or Mother of Foxes on TikTok, and Mother of Foxes on Instagram. That's just me being myself.
And if for no other reason, follow her and read it, because I will occasionally troll her on her accounts.
Yes, this is Mark's.
define occasionally.
Well, you know, daily.
All right. Well, Leah, thank you very much for joining us. We really had a fun time talking to you. It's been a long time coming. We've been trying to get you on for the right episode, and I think we definitely struck on the right topic.
Love talking to you guys. It's nice to have the podcast talk back to me. Usually I'm just yelling at my radio.
Yeah. Are you gonna listen and talk back to yourself?
I will. I'll be like, oh my God, Christina, why didn't you edit that out?
you have to try. Now here's where we get into the trust exercise.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, that was a fun conversation, Mark.
Now, it turns out that I actually knew her.
You've known her for a long time.
You've known her
all her life.
Every single day of her life, I've known who she is. Yes. No, and it's very convenient to have someone like that who does have experience with AI in industry. and to find out that she's, you know, a cruel hatchet woman.
She really was laying it all out there.
She's like, I'm firing 2,500 people.
But they're all offshore, so it doesn't really count. Doesn't matter.
It's not like they're Americans or anything.
All right, so why don't we tell about our social media? We have a Twitter. We are at extemporaneous2 on Twitter. We have personal Twitter accounts as well. I am at Christina Gen X on Twitter and Blue Sky, so please come and follow us there.
And Threads. There.
And Threads. Mark, although I don't post on Threads, I just can't get into Instagram on any level except to watch Reels, and that's all I use it for, and to call people who are not in this country.
Sneaky.
Yeah. Mark is at Mark Eats Peach on Twitter, and then on Threads and Blue Sky, he is at Mark Sned.
Yes.
So, thank you for coming and listening to us each week. Please share us with a friend, and I'm going to say bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.